This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mother, don't you recognize your son?
Welcome, everybody, once again to Sopranos Podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is...
David Feudernick.
And this is...
Paul Golias.
And we're talking Sopranos, Season 3, Episode 5, Another Toothpick.
Another toothpick. We are joined by a very special guest, very funny stand-up comedian. He has 17 podcasts of his own. He's a Connecticut boy, so we got the four Connecticut triumvirate.
Hey.
We also play basketball together when there's not a pandemic. Mike Falzone, thank you for coming on, Mike.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. I don't think I've ever been this excited to do a podcast ever.
I can tell.
Really?
I can hear it in your voice that you cannot wait for this to be over.
I can't wait.
Did you watch the show live at any point?
Dude, I at the time was an Italian teenager in the Northeast. So we were obligated to watch all episodes of The Sopranos as them.
So what? Yes. Yeah. So like, was your family all into it? Like
everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone I knew was into The Sopranos. There was no one who was like, how people like with Game of Thrones, be like, it's not really my thing.
Right,
there was no one Northeast that was not watching The Sopranos. It seems like true. To me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, 20 years ago, it was the only fucking prestige television on. I mean, the network. Shows were garbage.
Always do our list like this, dog. Don't do our list like this.
sorry, you're right.
Dude, we were just watching Oz over and over again on a loop until Sopranos came out.
Just waiting for something to come along.
I don't know how many more prison rapes I can sit through. I need something that more relatable.
He heats up the pen. I love this part. I hate this part.
I need some more lovable fucking psychopathic murderers.
Oh, this is the episode where he becomes a white supremacist. This is a good one.
quiet down.
Yeah. Where in the Northeast are you from?
I'm from Southern Connecticut. I was
45
to an hour away from New York City.
Wait, I'm a Milford boy.
Oh, dude, I lived in Milford for a while. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
nice,
from Stratford
dude.
Originally.
Right. We're neighbors.
I was born in Stamford. I grew up
as
in
was
Stratford.
I.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, What hospital?
Oh, Paisan. Hey. Oh, Eugene.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm home a little bit.
Yeah, we are.
This might be the first time we've had an actual Italian person on. So Golias is just like over the moon. Right? Paul is over the moon.
I can't wait to get this thing canceled.
Impossible.
Guys.
Impossible. What would that look like? Well, what would that take to cancel this fucking podcast? Can't wait. Can't wait.
We'll get there.
Mike knows a couple of our friends, Paul Briganti, Travis Helwig as well. You know those guys?
Yeah, we all went to high school together.
Wow, cool.
So you know Seven Seas? Yeah. You know the bar in Milford, the Seven Seas? You know that?
Yeah, the one with the ropes on it.
That's the old haunts.
Yeah. We used to go to SBC.
SBC
to
down there.
Archie's, Stonebridge, all that crap.
Great wings at Archie's. All right, this has been Milford Talk. should we get into this fucking episode?
Yeah,
another toothpick written by the great Terrence Winter. This originally aired March 25th, 2001. Oh, I was so close to turning 17. Oh, baby, so close to looking just in the general direction of women. So we open in Melfi's office. As mentioned in a previous episode, she thinks that Carmela should come to one of his sessions, and we start on Tony. Pan over, reveal that Carmela is there, and it's reveal, a little awkward.
Because as a rule, they they never have camera movement in the Melfi scenes. I don't know if
it's always a locked off shot. Yeah,
because they're always trying to just not tell the viewer how they're supposed to be feeling towards anything going on in that room. So they limit camera movement, and then that just slow pan to Carmela being there is fucking so satisfying.
Yeah,
because it's just gonna be a shit show, and it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Brought me back to some of my couples therapy sessions.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Mike, you have a podcast with your wife. I mean, were you able to relate to this?
It's a couple therapy session that we have on Patreon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Mike doesn't want to go into it any further detail unless he subscribed to the Patreon. But you relate to this, Mike, as a married man?
Not really. I mean, we have really good communication, where most old Italian men have zero communication.
Right, right.
It's normally where's the food, and close the window, it's too cold in here, back sure. and forth until you have kids.
Right.
But she's my wife is Albanian, so I do relate to the absolute no, there's no nonsense whatsoever.
yeah. For yeah. sure.
Should nip that in the bud.
Joe, you relate to that. Your wife is a Spitfire type. You would describe her as that, right?
Yeah, I mean, she just walked out the door because we were definitely having an argument before I came up with the podcast.
You're like, I can't really comment on it right now, but yes, she is a Spitfire.
So it's still kind of like in my head about, so, this is going to be a great app, though. It's going to be a real great app.
Yeah.
You're good, man. Hey, we're just here to have some fun, have some laughs.
Yep. Hi, babe. How you doing?
As somebody who has been couples therapy, I find that Melfi does kind of gang up on her on Carmela, and she wouldn't do that.
You need to, I mean, especially a professional woman as herself, she would be a little more aware of Carmela's feelings in those moments, because Carmela comes in hot, and she's really, she's very sensitive to the ganging up on her.
She's right. It's I have to sit here and listen to this fucking piece of shit tell me that I'm the source of all his issues. When he's fucking right. different women every week and shit,
Yeah. Oh, when she's how about you explore how you stick your dick in anything with a pulse? Ooh, things got spicy real quick.
There's really no, nowhere you can go from there.
Another scene of them together in therapy, or was that?
Yeah, we do.
Not
don't
in this
we?
Episode.
Not anything. In this episode.
Oh, no, not in this episode.
No,
but does in the future the storyline doesn't really go anywhere.
I guess I'm thinking of when they're in therapy with AJ, with AJ's therapy.
Oh yeah,
that's what I'm thinking of. Tony has guy's teeth in his the cuff of his pants from almost killing him.
Go back maybe? Just to the first minute and a half of this episode. And I almost went back and got the time code, but it takes Tony maybe a minute and 45 seconds to say the word gabagool.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And I hadn't watched this. I probably haven't watched any of these since 2000. One. And I was I wonder how obnoxious it's going to sound. I press play and a cool song comes up and I'm like, I remember all this. I'm going back to my, end of high school, early college. And then the dialogue starts. There's that cool shot that you were talking about. And Tony goes, gabagool.
Opening line.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Mike, we mentioned this.
Gabagool.
We mentioned this a fair amount on the podcast.
Interior gabagool. Sorry, I have to give you props for that joke.
There is a Twitter account where a guy went through every episode and did a Gabagool counter of any times Gabagool was seen or mentioned. And so, yeah, so that
we're big fans.
We're big fans of the Gabagool. At least
once an episode.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
We're
always telling our guest to go there and go to his Twitter account.
I mean,
and
look,
what is the, is the Gabagool at Gabagool counter?
It's something it's like, or where's the Gabagool or something?
Is it spelled the way it's spelled, or is it spelled the way it sounds?
Spelled the way it sounds. Yeah. No, if you gotta it was explain. Like Kappa Chiola, like nobody would know the fuck you're talking about.
Look, it's cool to see Barry Bonds like take walks and stuff, but every now and then, I mean, you want to see him hit home runs. I mean, you got to hear the Gabagool. Come on.
You got to play the hits, baby. You
got to play the hits.
Well, it's also not too long into the episode before Tony starts saying some racist shit.
So the first scene ends with, you know, one of, I think, the most classic, iconic lines where Melfi says, "You both seem very angry." And Tony goes, "Yeah, you must have been at the top of your fucking class." And someone when I was looking for fucking internet, someone on Reddit pointed out that Edie Falco is almost cracking. Like, you can see her in the background, like, cracking up.
Really? I mean,
the delivery is just so good. And then anytime anybody ever said anything obvious for the next 20 years, that's how people responded.
Right.
Your fucking class.
So then Tony's all pissed off. We see him speeding on the highway. The legend, the great Charles S. Dutton, pulls him over. Tony's immediately like, "Oh, it's fucking smoke." Like, just like, God. Says like 50, like five racist things in a row. Like, oh.
Very That's hard like, to like Tony this episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a good Tony episode.
And they do make it a point to like, you know, yeah. Is that why they make it a point for him to be like, maybe that was a little too harsh what you did to him, to the cop.
Here's
like,
the thing, because Tony's obviously racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he wants to come off more like racist than he even really is. Like, he has some sort of like conscience, and he's like, I mean, when he tries to give the guy the money at the end is like the tell, right?
Yeah,
but I guess you know, he's doing it for selfish reasons, right? He's just trying to buy back his own peace of mind after being a piece of shit and getting this guy fired. But
and of course has the whole interaction with Meadow. What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say he has that conversation with what's the guy's name? The cop's name?
Leon?
It doesn't matter. You know who I'm talking about. Leon.
Yeah.
He has that whole conversation about how he's not eligible for like overtime anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And I took that as like Tony was like, oh, he's a family guy. He has stuff to take care of. Like needing overtime is a universal thing. So I thought that was kind of a human moment. And then he just goes back to like rich, powerful white guy at the end where I could give this guy shove a couple bills in this guy's pocket and all is forgiven.
Right.
Right. Right.
Oh, Tony was ahead of his Tony was ahead of his time, dude. Hashtag defund the police, you know?
You must have been at the head of your time.
Exactly.
So yo, defund the police though. There's not enough fountain stores for all these cops to go work in, dude.
Yeah, that's right.
Get some extra hours in.
I was looking up the shooting locations of this episode because I was just curious what that church was that they go to.
Febby's funeral.
Fountains of Wayne existed and it closed in 2009.
Yeah, I think the band named themselves after the
store. Did they really?
I believe they did.
Wow. R.I.P.
I didn't know that.
All right, R.I.P. I forget the lead singer's name, but he just passed away. R.I.P.
I was saying R.I.P. to the store, Fountains of Wayne.
Oh, you only care about fucking property damage. classic Paul.
Heartless.
So there's a whole interaction. He writes them the ticket. Like Tony looks like a complete scumbag. By the way, Connecticut Boys, did you notice what store was in the background? We mentioned it on the podcast last week.
Sleepies? Sleepies?
Nope. Bob's baby, Bob's stores. Remember Bob's?
Oh, yes. Nice.
I didn't
Yo,
see that.
If you needed some socks or like some champion shit, dude, Bob's baby.
Dude, why was socks that? I need socks. I got to go to Bob's.
Yeah.
That was like the number one thing.
Your mom's like, oh, we'll go to Bob's on Saturday. She's all pissed off because it's so hard to be a parent. really hard to be.
Let me get your stupid 12-year-old ass some cheap ass clothes at Bob's. That's why.
Oh my god, because you know it's gonna get ripped and tossed in some mud and fucking.
I'm not buying you another Derek Jeter jersey.
Yeah, dude, I was just about to say you need knee-high tube socks and an Allen Houston t-shirt. You go to Bob's.
Shout out, Bob.
For me, it's like, Mom, I need the new South Park tee. I want the one with all the characters. Every one of the characters is on there.
Another great line in that scene is just a high point of your career.
Oh yeah,
Which my friend, our friend who was on the pod, Joey Coco, from my friend from college, he said that to a cop recently.
Oh no!
In L.A. when he got pulled over, for crossing the carpool lane thing that everyone does. Mm-hmm, and he said that to the cop. He said the cop just like froze, like didn't know what to do.
Yeah, he's lucky he didn't get beat to death.
Then he called up his congressman and he got the guy fucking fired. He's pretty fucked up. Anyway, then we go to kind of the inciting incident of the whole fucking episode. We get Brian Spadafore, Vito's brother, and his coworker are getting lunch. He asks for a Manhattan Special if they have it instead of a Coke. Love Manhattan Special. You guys ever have Manhattan Special?
Manhattan Special?
It's like espresso. It's like coffee soda.
Coffee soda?
It sounds disgusting. It's
wait, they
great.
Make it?
Yeah, it's
like
a New York thing.
Place?
Manhattan Special is like the name of the company. Anyway.
I know what it is. I've never had it.
Yeah,
but I know,
it's like old school,
now I know what you're talking about.
Glass bottle. His buddy goes in, Mustang Sally, gets out the fucking golf club. One of the harder things to watch on the show when you see him hit the guy's fucking head. You just see his fucking like brains, like his head just split open.
I was watching episode with my wife, and she was like doing work or whatever on the couch, and then just all of a sudden she's like, "Holy fucking shit,
dude! It's fucking terrible." I mean, you immediately
and
forget.
You're like, "Hey, you fucking deserved it," and that's how you guys start fighting,
pretty much.
Fuck.
I mean, he did nothing. He did literally nothing. He stood there and told the girl, like, "Go find another ride."
Yeah, we got a job in
Phoenix.
He's
on the guy's side.
He's like,
"Get in the car. How bad could your abusive boyfriend be?"
By the way, you guys, you probably won't, Mike, because you're not a fucking degenerate Sopranos nerd like us. But you guys recognize Tina, the woman who's trying to get the ride?
I know she comes up in later episodes.
Yes. Yeah.
She's like AIDS friend.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. She like, oh yeah, no, she's the one
box. She's on the double day with Lil Pauly.
Oh yeah.
That's right.
How about her box?
Yeah.
Let's see her box.
Yeah, that's what he says. Right. I knew she looked familiar, but I didn't.
Shout
realize
out to Tina. They had to bring her back, dude. I mean, she was so
they had to.
Come on.
They couldn't just give her that.
Yeah, so this is a fucking awful scene to watch.
this is what everybody remembers this episode for. Is the eventual, like, so they bring in Burt Young playing Bacalao Sr.
And it sets it up well because, like, you're so fucking desperate for this guy to get his because it's, like, fucking awful. We get – there's so many good memorable things in this episode. So we cut to the hospital. Gigi's crew is there. Fucking – Paulie, I brought him some Whitman's. Fucking just throws a fucking Whitman sampler down on his feet.
Like between his legs.
Yeah.
Sure, that's where that goes. Yeah.
Squeeze this box with your toes. Let us know you got.
Hey, raise your hand if you want a fucking piece of chocolate.
Don't say nothing if
you want me to eat half the box.
You know he's gonna wake up.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's gonna wake up and he's gonna be like, "What the fuck are all these chocolate wrappers doing on my bed?"
See, I feel like they wrote that scene just because Terrence Winter had like an idea for a good Whitman sampler gag in it.
Right.
Like, yeah. Let's again. I mean, because that's like just them silently unwrapping it at the end and just eating it over his comatose body. Dude,
that was so great. I kept waiting for like another line to come after that, but it was just a long sustained shot of them eating the chocolates.
Eating a Whitman sampler at this guy's fucking deathbed for all they know.
It also, it's all like he says it off camera. So like they ADR'd it. So they, I wonder if there were a bunch of alts.
Yeah.
So, in that scene, though, hold on.
Yeah.
Because we've discussed it in past episodes. We tried to figure this out. Jackie Jr. when Tony's like, hey, what are you doing here? Or whatever. Jackie Jr. is like, what? I can't visit my cousin?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Jackie April is cousins
with Vito.
With
and Brian.
Vito Spadafore right. and Brian. And Vito ultimately tries to like hit on Adriana while Chris is in rehab. And Adriana is Richie April's niece, right?
Correct.
Am I making the right connections here, or am I crazy?
Yeah, you are.
I need to see it drawn out.
Yeah, we're kind of visual guys, so.
Yeah.
But is it cousin? Like, are they really blood related?
I don't know.
That's the thing, right?
It could be by marriage. Everybody's cousin.
Could be by marriage, you know, or like, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that does.
I really like
that. Stick out.
I like that we get to see Dr. Tony Soprano in this scene. When he comes into the ICU and everyone's crying and his cousin's like, he's going to be a vegetable, Tony. And Tony's like, he'll be fine. I went over his chart. He's going to be fine.
Oh, these are good vitals. Yeah. Vitals are really good.
Yeah, that was
he's going to be okay.
Right. Yeah.
Ultimately, Tony was right, though.
True.
Hey, he turned out to be okay.
Was he? Did he turn out? Did he?
He like, appears later episodes as
the
fine.
The whole arc where Vito turns out to be gay. There's like a moment where he brings brother in to like watch his back.
I mean, he's
during
got like
with Tony.
Big weird glasses on, and like he looks kind of fucked up still. But yeah,
he's not normal.
Survive. He does survive.
Yeah.
Good. God bless.
Hey, God bless Brian.
God bless. We get Ralphie breaking balls. He's pissed off that Gigi is captain still. Some good Ralphie ball breaking.
There's so many times in this episode where it's like, hey, I'm breaking balls here. You're really just like saying the worst thing to a person at a time. Like, yeah, I mean,
guy's brother might die. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, you're always eating salami sandwiches, you fat fuck. It's like, what the fuck?
Jesus Christ. Levity, please.
Dude, but that's like, also, I don't know if you've ever been to like a wake with Italian people.
Yes,
but
I have many times.
The crazy shit that is said there, like that's not too far off from like, that's not just like a TV show thing. Like Italians,
yeah, that's people do they very much utilize humor to break up that's sort true. Of these somber moments.
And he says, "Oh, a little levity."
Yeah.
Also
I'm not dealing with emotions.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then he calls Mustang Sally. Like says the kid's a hothead. I'm like, if Ralphie is calling you a hothead, you are a fucking psychopath. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Through a fucking vendor at the Meadowlands, through a vendor over the side because too many onions on his fucking hot dog.
Dude.
Okay. Well, insane. Can't wait for this guy to fucking get killed. We cut to the aforementioned church for Carmela's Uncle
Febby. Uncle Febby. We never see him.
Yeah. Can't forget that name though, Febby. What a name.
Oh, they use it. Febby Petrullio is the guy Tony kills up in Maine,
right?
In college.
The original Febby Wop.
That's right. The original Febby Wop. That's right. We have the service. Tony sees that Bobby Bacala's father is in attendance. Then they talk outside. He's coughing because he's sick, dude, because it's what you do when you're all sick and shit.
Very convincing
it's good cough acting. It's good cough acting, I think.
So much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The title of the episode is uttered a couple of times by Janice. She says another toothpick in reference to Bobby Sr. Junior's all pissed off. We don't know why at that point. And he says, oh, he smoked those Camels since he was in short pants. What do you expect?
Yeah,
it's true.
Oof. Good visual.
Don't smoke. Don't do it. Kids, don't smoke out there. Come on.
Yeah, don't do it.
Is there anything else?
Don't eat gabagool. Don't eat gabagool.
Yeah, don't eat. There's another thing that'll give you cancer.
Yeah. One's might work a little slower, but you know, nitrates, tobacco, it's all fucked, dude. Just be healthy. It's
a bad combination of stuff.
Just be healthy as I take a sip of my beer. I do love Gandolfini's acting in this because he clearly loves Burt Young, who plays Bobby Sr. Like, he's so happy to see him, and I feel like that's like genuine. Just happy to be acting with him. Burt Young, the legend.
Burt Young, legend. Rocky. Paulie, right? You played Paulie.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Terminator.
Just always a dude on his last legs. That's right. You know? He's just always a dude just hanging on.
Yeah.
Right.
Barely functioning.
For like 50 years, he's always played someone who's 70 and fucked up.
Wait,
is Burt Young still alive?
He is.
Is he still with us?
He is.
Yeah, God bless him.
He's
80. I did the same thing. I was like, is he still alive? I think I do that every time I see him.
He's only 80 now?
That's insane. 80.
I would have put him at 104 in this episode.
That means he was 26 in this episode.
He had short pants on.
Out of college.
Yeah. Dude, he just transformed himself for everything.
To set in short pants.
Dude, he was actually younger in this episode than he was in the Rocky movies. A lot of people don't know that. That's a little trivia.
That's great. Anyway, then we cut to Vesuvio's. Adriana quits. This starts just like a whole just fucking downward weird spiral for Artie, man. Just like...
This is a crash and burn.
I feel like this is... From here on out, Artie is just so fucked. Because also like the business shit too that he goes into business with Tony with the like fucking Cetriol's products like
leaving Charmaine is not good for Artie.
No,
I was gonna say like we watch one of the most graphic, bloody, disturbing murders in this episode, and still it's harder for me to watch that scene with with Artie and Adriana at dinner at the end.
If you know,
we could use a beautiful, classy, whatever, you know, and she's just like,
it's like rubbing her hands.
Go to the
and
women's
stuff.
Room.
Yeah.
Like,
awful. Yikes. He's got the earring in, shit. Yeah, we've all been there.
Dude, do you guys talk about what happens to, obviously, you talk about what happens to characters later on. I forgot what happens to him eventually. He gets killed eventually?
No.
Artie?
No.
Yeah, he doesn't?
No.
Okay, I thought I remembered that for some reason.
You would think it from the way Chris came at him in this episode.
Yeah, but also Tony gives him a kiss when he was like, I'm in love with her or whatever. He was like, don't ever fucking say that again.
Yeah.
I love her now.
In this episode, Artie. This is not going to be arc over the rest of the season.
Don't say that in no other episodes.
So we get that quick scene with Junior and Bobby playing checkers. Junior can't have anyone else talk about like anything sad about themselves like without being like so annoyed by it. He's like, all the goddamn morbidity. Stop talking about your fucking dad.
Yeah.
Stop talking. Hey.
I know why he's being an asshole now. But,
we know
but,
now.
Like, the first time watching is like Junior's being more of an asshole than he usually is.
Yeah.
So,
but like weird. Even when he doesn't have cancer, he's fucking always thinking about himself. Always thinking about himself.
Right.
It's a Soprano gene, really. Then we go back to Vesuvio's. Yeah, we have the whole fucking drunken interaction with Christopher.
That's another scene where he's like, "Hey, I'm joking."
Dude, I love that.
He gets a fork in the fucking eye.
The shot of him, like we just see fucking Imperioli's his like medium shot, and we just see fucking Artie massaging him, and you could tell Imperioli's about to laugh so hard, like
good. John Ventimiglia nails like a sloppy drunk here. In that scene,
he's
like trying to fix Chris's hair.
Yeah,
you can tell Imperial is like trying not to break a little bit.
Right.
But
you think you're the only one who knows how to swing a meat cleaver? You like that line? You guys like that line or what?
Dude, watch out, Artie. Huh? He's coming.
He's flying too close to the sun.
That's right.
Exactly.
One of many times that Tony saves Artie from getting killed.
That's like the classic guy in any scenario where there's a bunch of macho dudes. There's always one guy who's like really wants to be in with the group, but he's just not, but he can't accept whatever place he is in because he wants so badly to have his identity tied up. You know, with all those guys.
Absolutely.
Well, it's kind of, now that you mentioned it, it's kind of like, you know, in Goodfellas when Spider gets fucking shot. Imperioli's like the reverse in this scene where where this guy's just crossing the line a little too much and ends up almost fucking putting a fork in his eye.
Right. But only no one saved Imperioli in Goodfellas.
Yeah, Imperioli died. He did die.
Just get shot fucking 20 times. We jump to Zelman's office. Mr. Spears, the running Mr. Spears fake name for Tony. Yeah. I love that. Mr. Spears on line three for you. So he calls in the favor to Zelman. Zelman says he'll take care of it. Then we come back to Junior's. Bobby wants him to tell his father not to do the hit on Mustang Sally. Junior goes on the whole like Teddy Roosevelt fucking diatribe about how some things are a matter of duty.
Only because he couldn't convince Tony not to have him do this hit.
Right.
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 So now he's like singing a different tune. It's completely obvious.
Yeah. He says that he didn't talk to Tony about it. He decided not to call him. Then we get the scene with Artie and Charmaine, where he's saying that he's going into business with Tony, and she's like, why is it called Satrials? And he says, products that start with a V remind people of vagina. And she's like, excuse me?
The fuck did you just say to me?
What'd you just say? Vaseline. Yeah.
Vaseline.
Yeah, what? Yeah, you know, Vaseline always reminds me of vagina, and that's why I don't buy any.
Should have went with Vagisil. Vagisil. That would have been a better one.
Yeah.
Viagra, even.
Yeah.
All these unrelated V words.
Yeah. Then we go to Fountains of Wayne, and Tony sees Leon there. Was there something you want to say, I suppose?
Oh no, but do they go back to the Johnny Sack when Johnny Sack eats with them? Is that after this we go back to Fountains of Wayne?
That's after this.
That's after this. Okay.
Well, yeah. Why don't you just say it now?
There's a couple of scenes.
Well, for some reason I have that. Anyway, I just love that they keep going with a running like obsession of Ralphie and Gladiator.
Oh, yes.
Feel like I've just started to realize that in the last two episodes that like, which is going to pay off in the next episode. But
also the obsession with like DVDs, like this DVD player.
The flat screen.
Surround
flat
sound.
Screen. Yeah. But even like Paulie is just like this fucking guy with Gladiator. Yeah, like he starts talking about it, you see Paulie go, Jesus Christ, like enough, okay? Like enough with this movie.
I mean, it really is like what like 13-year-old boys do. Like fucking
look at these guys.
It's like us like quoting Austin Powers. It's like, fuck, this guy's gonna fucking do the Austin Powers voice again.
Or us with the Sopranos.
Yeah, I'm just about to say.
Fucking Ralphie would have a Gladiator podcast if this is 2020. Okay.
No matter what age you are, you're always 13.
Yeah.
Now I'm very sad. Then we go. Yeah. So we go to Fountains of Wayne. Tony continuing his mega racism this episode goes, oh, it's Shaft.
Shaft.
It's weird how
he didn't like that.
He didn't warm the officer up by saying, oh, it's Shaft. He tells him he got transferred to the property room. Remember that the guy who plays the boss like made like a viral video out of this of him like I forget what it was. The guy who's like, Leon, take a break at two.
Yeah, he made like a little song about him, like his only role ever being the guy who plays Leon, Take Your Break at Two in the Sopranos episode.
Yeah, listeners, look that up. It was really good.
Actor
like,
did?
10 years ago.
Yeah, he did.
I need to see this. I need to see this garbage.
it was one of those things that's like very like 2009. Like,
oh, wow.
It's like, oh, whoa, this is a great YouTube vid.
Yo, so he's on, man. he's got to push his brand, dude. He's got to look. If you were in The Sopranos 20 years ago, then fucking make your viral video.
He's the reason Fountains of Wayne actually closed. He probably did actually work there.
That's right.
The viral video made him look like a dummy, and then they closed. They had to close.
That's right. Out of shame, because the dumb viral video
had nothing to, had nothing to do with Home Depot and Lowe's. Definitely had to do with the the guy making a viral video.
Sure.
right.
Yeah.
Then we get the famous scene in the fucking episode with the hit. Bobby Senior shows up. I feel like he lets him in a little too easily. Like he just keeps.
Well, he had called him, so
right.
He called him to try and like get a like make it right.
But he's like,
so he was expecting him.
I guess maybe because I'm like such a scaredy like little asshole. Like I'm like, shut the door, man. He like keeps the door open too long. I'm like, yo, they can fucking like snipe you, dude. Get in there.
He just had so much trust in him because
he was
his godfather. I mean,
his godfather.
He's like, they'll never find me in Staten Island. Like, yeah. Like, why don't you not go to Virginia?
To keep Mustang Sally safe all of a sudden.
Right.
Close the door, Mustang Sally. You got me safe in your house with your golf clubs.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the guy, like, fucking, he was so quick to write him off. Tony's like, you want to kill your godson? He's like, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, it'll make me feel useful, which is. Okay, like then you start feeling like on his side, like, yeah, let the old man feel useful. He's fucking dying. Let him go kill this guy.
But it is true. He's like been, you know, quote unquote, retired for 7-8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, he does seem eager to do it. And like they call him the fucking Terminator. Like,
fucking sick in the head. Like, he's a monster.
He's done it 1,000 times. Like, yeah, like if you're doing something consistently for 30 years and then you don't do it anymore, yeah, you probably miss it a little bit, even if it is shooting people in the head.
Yeah,
it seemed like he really enjoyed it. I'll tell you that much. When he killed the guy who he was hiding out with, his like he really enjoyed killing that guy.
Yeah, when he shoots him in the face, through the chair. Yeah.
Has the satisfying cigarette afterwards.
Oh yeah.
Oh god. Oh,
painful.
Oh man. I just feel
like.
So
was it the cancer or was it the car crash that killed him? We don't get an answer, huh?
Probably the car crash.
I'm guessing the car crash. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, he would have lived at least another 10 seconds if he didn't smash into that pole.
I got smoke in my eyes. I can't see a thing.
I mean, that's so, like, it's always hard to watch, like, when the inhaler drops in the car and you, like, can't get to it. Oh,
yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
What a great, the whole shooting scene too was so good too. I mean,
one of my favorite one episode like guest stars is Burt Young in this. I think he's so good.
Fantastic.
I was gonna say, like, you know, is there any other this seems like it's the best one off episode guest stars.
I mean, can't off the top of my head, I can't think of
I can't think of it either, but yeah.
I didn't remember what happened in this one, and I honestly thought that he was going to mess up and not get him, because when he fires the first shot, it hits his ear. So I was like, oh, no, the Terminator doesn't have it anymore. You know, and I was like, oh, shit. And then this is how everybody gets caught out. And I'm right back into, like, 2001 mind, like, oh, man, Tony's going to go down. But there's still, like, 7 seasons of the show left.
I don't remember there being 5 more seasons without Gandolfini, but I guess
that's how it happened.
I mean, hey, that's good filmmaking, right? That's a successful.
Dude, it's very intense.
At the very beginning, at the very beginning, during some of the conversations, to be completely honest, I was like, oh, this is like a little corny, or I don't know if I never paid attention to the editing or the camera movements or anything, but there were a couple things where I was like, oh, maybe this isn't as good as I remember it being. And then what really, by the end of it, what made it so good for me, I was like, dude, the story, to be part of like this long arcing storyline and to have this satisfying episode, I was like, this show was like goddamn brilliant.
Oh yeah,
it's insane. Yeah, I think you're like
it's a good standalone episode.
Yeah. It's a good standalone episode, but it's also like to your point, like they touch on so many things that are part of the broader arc in this episode.
Yeah.
It's like it's a little bit messy, even. It's like they touch on the Jackie Jr. stuff, and then
Junior getting cancer.
Junior getting cancer, but like the fight between Tony and Meadow about her black boyfriend, mm-hmm. like
group therapy, couples therapy,
the couples therapy they come in on,
the like, bug getting taken out.
The fucking bug in the lamp getting neutralized. Yeah. What other show like would spend its entire season opener setting up this like this FBI bug in the main character's house, and then four episodes later just fucking like off. the anticlimax like in the series is like climactic in itself because you're like, oh, of course his fucking daughter just takes the lamp and the FBI that spent thousands of dollars and countless man hours trying to get this in this guy's house.
Right.
Like, just completely befuddled. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah.
So good. So Bobby Sr. Smashes into the lamp pole or whatever. R.I.P. We get Bobby is distraught and Junior wants to know what killed him, and then Junior has like his little freak out. Bobby's like, what the fuck was that? Then we go back to the Vesuvios, and basically, Charmaine is not doing the same job that Adriana did, and clearly Artie sees it as a way to put the wheels in motion to get a divorce. It's like he's like itching to push her to that.
It's like he
place.
Was waiting for her to say it, right?
Right. He looks so content when she says, like, if you choose Tony over me, we're through, Arthur.
What are you gonna do, divorce me? That sounds like a pretty good idea if you want to be thinking about that.
Well, you could divorce me and then I could go out to a really nice dinner with Adriana. Oh, don't do that.
What are you gonna do, sign these papers that I have in my back pocket? I mean, what?
What are you gonna do, have me sign it for you if you don't feel like it right now? I guess I'll just do that.
What are you gonna do? Have me grasp my hands tightly around your hands and make your own signature?
What you do? Take the kids so I don't have to drive them to practice anymore? What are you gonna do?
Anyway, table 7 needs more bread. What the fuck?
You suck at this. What are you gonna do? Remind me where I put my earring that one time. I told you not to let me forget it.
I love he like they talked about divorce and 7 minutes later he had an earring in.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
he was primed. Oh, he was primed.
Dude, primed. He looks so, he looks so good. And Charmaine is such a fucking like, she's great. She's like
absolutely.
That's a fucking catch.
She's like not an asshole. He's like, no. My wife is a cunt, and I was like, yeah. I don't know. She's bringing up some pretty valid points.
Because she's telling you to like, fucking just be cool with being yourself. Yeah, she sucks.
This bitch always telling me to be myself.
True to thine known self.
Right, right.
Bitch.
I mean, honestly, like,
vegetables.
We probably get like, I mean, she and Leon are probably two of the most like good people in the whole
morally,
show.
Moral like,
people
like,
that aren't portrayed as like no the biggest herbs. That, you know, that aren't the guys are like, oh, Tony. Like sausage. Like, it's like the whitest, herbiest fucking like they're portrayed
just not
as good
with
people
it at all. They're immune to like Tony, the spell that Tony usually casts over people. Like
right.
And back to back with last episode where Melfi sort of stuck to her own morals with the rape and everything and not sicking Tony on her rapist.
Right.
Her Charmaine and this cop who refuses Tony's money at the end, like these are the people who Tony can't touch, and he fucking hates it.
Right. Mm. So then we go to the doctor's office. Junior reveals that he has the big casino. He has cancer. Tells Tony.
Man, that really surprised me. I remember watching that live, and I was like, oh, fuck.
I also, Junior's gone. I couldn't tell if he was, like, making it up at first, you know? Because then we also get the scene later where, like, Bobby's like coming to pick him up for his father's funeral, and he looks like so content, like with the fucking blanket and like he's watching like
makes a little grilled cheese for
himself. Grilled cheese, little Sinatra movie,
little TV tray.
Yeah, yeah. So I always felt like he was. Does he have cancer? And of course, we find out he does. But
I think he was doing it for the attention. He's like, he's almost like, now everybody has to hold me in a different regard, I think. Right. Like, and maybe even take him more seriously, like the immediate people around him. I don't know. That's what it seemed like to me. It's like, he almost said it like he was so stately. He was like, I have cancer. You know,
he's like looking off into the distance.
Yeah, like relishing it almost. Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It almost seemed like it was for the attention. I think.
Yeah, he really had cancer, but I think
it
just speaks to like the fucking mob or Soprano mentality of how quickly can I like use this to my advantage?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like how quickly can I get some sympathy and not have to go to this fucking funeral of my friend?
But doesn't he also say something to the effect of like, don't tell anyone because he doesn't want to come off as weak to anybody?
Yes.
Sure.
But
yeah,
he still
true.
Maybe
that's
uses it to manipulate the people who are like in his close circle.
Yeah. I feel like he just wants like to be able to manipulate people. You're right.
Yeah. So. I'm never going to lose at checkers again.
Yeah. 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 So
that's his big play. Yeah. I'm going to beat Bacalao checkers forever.
So he says, don't tell anyone. Immediately cut to Tony telling Janice that he has cancer.
Yeah, that was great.
Uncle June's got cancer. And then immediately cut to them drunk on the couch together.
Yeah, just slamming fucking red wine.
Yeah. Which this is, I think this is like the nicest scene between brother and sister here, Tony and Janice.
Yeah.
Because usually they're at each other's throats. And
right.
This was sort of, you know, until she starts like
asking about happened to Big Push. What happened to Sal Bomb and Serotonin? And then he's gotta go. Just finishes his wine real fast. He's like, whoops.
Let me chug this entire bottle of wine and leave.
Would you like to pray with me?
Dude, you know what we didn't see in this episode? That is like something about the Sopranos that sticks in my head that wasn't very prevalent in this episode was blinking, loud nose breathing Tony.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking? You guys obviously know what I'm talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But I just remember that like as a staple in every episode. Once in a while you get the and I was like, oh, here's he's gonna get drunk and be loud breathing Tony.
so close
it was almost there. Good. I mean, that's like
there's probably a whole 7-minute scene of just that, but then they're like, do we need it this episode? We could cut it.
The sound mixer's like, fuck, we got all that fucking wild shit of him breathing.
Okay, Tony, we're going to need 7 minutes of breathing. Hold for breathing.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, fuck you, Jack Bender. We should have had more breathing. Of Lost fame. Didn't he direct a lot of Lost? The guy who directed this episode.
Jack Bender did. Yeah. Big Lost guy.
So are you, Paul. We won't talk about this anymore. We don't want to lose any more listeners. so then we go back to the Soprano house. We just couldn't do without fucking Meadow singing, right? We just ample.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything I hate more than when she gets to sing.
Contract.
Yeah.
Like, I sing once per season.
Yeah. But it was Leave Me Breathless, which I thought was
breathless.
A very artistic choice.
Yes. Yes.
In this episode.
That's right.
True, yeah.
That's right. All the breathing issues, which is another reason why we need Tony fucking breathing like he has bad asthma. Like, come on.
Dude, they should have overlaid like a reprise of that song while Bacalao was looking for the inhaler on the floor of the car.
Yes.
You're right. That should have been playing in the car.
Hold on.
I bet it was. And then they were like, two on the nose.
Yeah,
just make
too much.
Sing
that's
it.
Too
yeah,
much. Yeah, yeah. Put the breathing in. Let's see how that sounds.
Music supervisors is like, hey, you're going to want that in there. and we get the whole scene where we reveal that she has brought the lamp up to the kitchen. That whole interaction with Tony being super, super racist again.
Gandolfini. But some of his like best acting is like just him being like just passively amused at a black man stealing Meadow's fucking bicycle.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
The just ten, that look he gives.
The 10 like, speed? Oh. How many bikes does she have? Was it the 10 speed exactly, or the yeah. 7 speed? Which one? The 7 we got speed. You two bikes.
Was it the Huffy Dual Shock?
Oh, fuck, the 10 speed?
Tony's a big cyclist. Tony's a...
That's right. He's more of a mountain bike guy, though.
Yeah. What's that, the Cannondale?
That the Trek?
The not Trek the Huffy. Yeah.
And we get Tony talks to Zelman again. And it's almost like the interaction with Meadow kind of triggers him into like being like, maybe I should do something to squash things with Leon.
Yeah,
and he ultimately decides, fuck it.
Not to, but then yeah. he doesn't get his job back, but then he right. goes and gives him $200. Like,
yeah. Great save. That, I don't understand that. Doesn't he say the thing costs? This is very stupid of me to get hung up on him. I'm already sorry about
it. Oh, please. This podcast is all about stupid.
But isn't he like, okay, that'll come out to, with tax and delivery, that'll be about $850. And then like they zoom in on him holding $300.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, just make sure it gets where it's going.
Yeah.
And yeah. Leon's like, that's $300. You're going to need $400 more.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll stick to my morals, and also you're bad at math.
Yeah.
Easy choice for me.
I'm not going to take this, but not because I don't want it. It's because it's not enough for the fountain.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You're not paying me the right amount of money.
But that's why Fountains of Wayne ultimately went out of business.
That's right.
Because people are just offering them like 80% less than what the sale was.
Well, it's cash. It's $75 cash. It's an $800 fountain. What am I going to do? Not take? He's holding it. What's hey, he gonna do?
Hold it. Go get dinner. Hey, he's offering me dinner. What am I gonna do?
I saw your boss make the viral video, okay? He's never gonna know. Yeah. That guy? That fucking guy?
Dude, Wayne's wife, Fountains of Wayne's wife, is like, I will divorce you if you don't stop taking $45 cash
on a $900 sale. And that's
the ep.
And that's
the ep. Anything else, boys? Anything else that you were struck by, that you enjoyed, that you thought we didn't touch on?
I think. I mean, we got a little of Johnny Sack. Like after he said he wasn't going to stick his beak in, he's already like dipping his toes in the Esplanade shit, like all that.
They got
stuff.
Little hookers giving little blowjobs.
I like that line.
Yeah.
That's a good Johnny Sack line.
They're just like. Three guys like in a full restaurant just smoking cigars.
Yeah, just smoking cigars. Yeah.
How fucking annoying would those guys be?
Jersey in 2001. Oh,
yeah,
disgusting.
And then everybody's like, "What the fuck? Cancer? Really?
From what? The Capricola?
The Capicola?"
Dude, I loved an excuse to watch this again. I'm gonna go back and watch more.
Good.
Because,
you
know, so many good memories, and I didn't remember, like, anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better on repeat viewings. So.
This is, I will say, so we'll jump into fucking internet. This is where we go on the online and we find stuff on Reddit and Twitter, what people are saying about this episode. It was kind of hard to find stuff because a lot of the commentary was just that this was in people's top five episodes of all time. A lot of
people love this episode.
A lot of people listen to this in their top eps. For good reason. There's a lot of shit going on.
Is there like a universal best episode of The Sopranos?
I would say Pine Barrens is like probably like of the casual viewer, it's probably considered like the most beloved.
Especially where Chris and Paulie are stuck in lost in the woods.
They're lost in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Buscemi directed it.
Yeah.
It's considered one of the more beloved ones, but I don't know. I don't know if there's like one episode. It also depends on what parts of the show you
really
like
is.
The best. You know, some people like the dream stuff, so like Test Dream is up there. Some people hate the Tony's like dream sequences and shit, so they're like, I like when people fucking die. Like, I like the murder.
Top 10 people fucking dying.
Let me see the old already dying man fucking murder somebody else and then Italian, die also.
Italian Death Compilation 6.
Faces of Gabagool.
This episode is definitely up there because it has a lot of fucking action in it. A lot of people getting like hurt or dead. Violence,
Absolutely. Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure. Which I will say that's like the last episode, this one and the next one, like have a lot of like tough.
I mean, the one before it too. This stretch of three episodes is like
that's what I said. The one darkest before point in the series.
Yeah,
and the one after.
Yeah, and the one after this. Yeah.
Insane.
All right, fucking internet. This is just a comment that I found on Twitter from @ArashIsOnline. I guess Arash is just always online. Gotta let him know. That stretch of Sopranos season 3 of Employee of the Month into Another Toothpick into University is maybe the most depressing sequence of TV ever. You really should never binge that show.
Oh my God. It's funny because like
what,
my girlfriend and I, when we binged it, we had to like we blew through first couple seasons, got through this, and then we have Employee of the Month, this, and University.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Like, I need to take a like 6 month break from the show because this is too much.
Yeah,
like,
Mike, if you don't remember, the next episode, Tracy is like the dancer at the Bada Bang that Ralphie murders in the back of the strip club.
Who's pregnant with his child.
Oh shit.
And he beats her to death very graphically. It's not a walk in the park.
Wow.
It's a valid point that it's depressing, but you should never binge this show, dude. Arash, get offline, bro. Get off and stay off.
Disagree.
Yeah.
All right. Reddit user Abaloo75 says, I always have a hard time watching Old Man Bacalao fumble around for his bloody inhaler before his ultimate demise. What scenes are you uncomfortable watching? I mean, we went over this last episode. Melfi getting raped is the hardest.
You fast forward through that every time. I do.
And and I say last episode, and Bobby getting killed as well. That's those are
very tough to watch.
And Tracy. I mean, those are probably the three for me. And Tracy getting
killed. Yeah.
I mean, none. I'm a sick bastard. You know, like I'll watch anything. I watched Dirty Boy. Prescott get his foot, flipped a different way yesterday. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I just want to.
Yeah, you're a sociopath.
I just want to let that be known.
Okay.
Cool. Put it on the record.
Spellman is online and he is wild.
Mike, do you remember anything from 20 years ago that you really felt like as a 19-year-old, you were like, oh man, this is uncomfortable?
WrestleMania 13.
Yo, true.
I don't I'm sure I had problems with like some of the super graphic scenes that you guys were talking about. I honestly just don't remember them.
Yeah.
But anything like that, even the golf club deal in this one, I was like,
it's
awful. Wow. And then when he keeps hitting them, when he's on the ground,
terrible.
I'm like, oh man, this show is fucking.
Dude, hair makeup fucking killed. They killed that gash, dude. Like, they look so fucking awful.
Tight gash.
Tight gash. Dude, well done.
Goalies, do you have anything sticks out to you?
I mean, all the fucking graphic violence shit, of course, especially towards women.
Yeah. Which
there's a lot of. Like Gandolfini, like, fucking choke slamming Gloria Trillo at the end of this season. Yep. Like, brutal to watch. And then just any scene with Janice in it. So
especially when she's having sex.
Yeah.
This is from Burger King 444. Hell yeah, dude.
Oh hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Here we go.
Yo, put the paper crown on, baby. I was rewatching Another Toothpick for the 100th time or so, and Zelman was just having dinner openly with known mobsters. is there no way some journalist couldn't photograph him and publish an expose or something? Or am I just nitpicking?
It's a little nitpicky because he's an assemblyman. How many fucking assemblymen can you like put a face to?
Yeah. You put that in like fucking Bergen, whatever the fuck, and like you think anyone's gonna people are gonna be like, who?
Right. Also, it's like it's mobsters and an assemblyman. So it's like even if this was like the cell phone picture era.
Right.
Still, who's taking pictures of the you're banking on a journalist being in the same restaurant at the same time.
Having dinner with his camera around his neck, just waiting to snap a fucking
photo.
It's
not fucking Matt Damon.
This dude's like, am I crazy or are we not gonna write a story about this?
Brian, you gotta stop following Assemblyman Zellman around, dude. It's gonna get sued.
Yeah. No, he's gonna slip up, and when he does, I'm gonna be right there. With my expose.
Vesuvius has to have some sort of like, you know, that's okay territory, right? You know, like you
that's probably
go
true
there
too. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And it'll be cool. Like somehow they have that set up or whatever.
Yeah, because the same could be said for them.
Journalist.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the same could be said for like Tony and Johnny Sack meeting in the open there. Like, you know,
well,
like,
sure, yeah. Yeah.
People are comfortable being there. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
This is from Mikey420. Nice, dude.
Oh, boy. You guys know what that means.
Smoky,
wink.
Smoky. Favorite time of day. Blaze it up. When Janice and Tony are sitting there talking about Uncle June having cancer and she's going on about her new God Christ kick, why does she ask him what happened to Pussy Bombancero? How would she know? I mean, the only way I can think of is if Richie somehow knew and told her. But that doesn't make sense. First, it seems like Tony, Syl, and Paulie told everyone he went into witness protection. And even if he did put two and two together, or she did put two and two together, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who brings his work home and tells his girl about it. And why would she ask specifically about Pussy?
I think she was just like sort of probing for a weak spot in Tony's like
something to take advantage of him on.
Yeah, like psyche, something where because her next question is like, "Do you want to pray with me?"
Yeah,
like she's just trying to like, I who knows like, what Janice
rile
is trying
him
to
up,
manipulate him into doing. But that's I think mostly they're just both wasted, and she's trying to emotionally manipulate him.
Yeah.
That's all they've been taught by their mother. So
right.
I would agree with that. Great analysis, Paul.
Yeah. Great analysis.
That's what I'm here for, man.
Killer analysis.
All right, we got a couple more. Turbo
put that
9
guy in his place.
Yeah, put that guy. Yeah. Fuck that.
Go
fuck
smoke
you.
Another doobie. Yeah. Mikey 420.
Go smoke some more dope, dude. You fucking doper. You dope head. Turbo 98115. Why would you hell make that your why is that your handle?
I really want Turbo, dude. I need it. I need it
fuck.
In there.
Turbo 98114 is taken? Fuck. Turbo 98115 says, I'm amazed at how detail-oriented David Chase was in so many regards with small minor details. While every once in a while he drops the ball. Yeah, like fucking any human being. I guess I'll keep going with this. One example I noticed while rewatching for the 20-something time is season 3, Another Toothpick. During the church service for Tony's uncle, the casket is in the church backwards. This is noticeable due to it being a military funeral, and the flag is always draped with the stars over the left shoulder. In a Catholic service, the casket enters and exits feet first, but in this scene has the head closest to the altar. I found this very ironic, given that Chase was detailed to the flag on the casket only to drop the ball on the placement. Side note, my father owns funeral homes and I was raised Roman Catholic, hence why this stuck out to me. Just not sure why it took so many rewatches to catch.
Worst dating profile I've ever heard in my entire life. Come on, man.
Hope this is your 20th and I hope final rewatch.
Yeah.
Move on to other brighter pastures.
Fuck it.
Like, and let me talk about the caskets in 6 feet under too. Okay. First off,
this might not be the place for it, but
this guy's just always posting about what where caskets are placed in
he's in
TV
every
shows.
Fucking subreddit.
He's like, no, I swear this is like my 45th time watching this.
So I was looking at the casket in season 27 of Wings, and I was wondering why the pilot didn't have his wings on his lapel when he was like, what the fuck, dude?
Showrunner dropped the ball much?
I noticed in 1991 when The Undertaker shoved the Ultimate Warrior into the casket on the Brother Love show.
Shouldn't that be feet first?
Yeah, anyway, dude. Fuck you, Turbo 98115. And this is another nitpicky person, last one. Mario Salami Petrino.
Come on, man.
Come on.
This is your alt handle, Dave.
Oh, man. MSP, baby. Mario Salami Petrino. Ah, what do you do? What do you do?
What do you do? What do you do?
So I'm watching season 3, episode 5, Another Toothpick. The scene right after Bobby's father dies, Junior loses his shit and starts smashing things in his living room. Throughout the entire scene, his glasses are on, except for a single half-second shot at 41:27, where his glasses are off as he smashes what appears to be a picture. I'm sure this was brought up before, but I just noticed it. No, I don't think it was brought up before, bro.
I think we covered this before, but I just want to mention.
He goes, and also, what was with the casket in the fucking funeral scene?
And another thing.
I am definitely not Turbo 98115. I am...
I mean, at this point, fucking internet is just so we can make fun of people's like internet handles and people who are like just slightly more nerdy than we are.
Side note, my father is an optometrist and he owns several lens crafters.
You don't take off your glasses in the middle of smashing up your house like that.
What, do you want to get the frame glass in your eyes? Why would you remove the protective surfaces from your eyes?
David Chase losing it? ?
Clearly, slim pickings for this episode. I'm honestly, like, most of it was people just talking about how much they love this fucking episode.
How much they love it, yeah.
Great up. Mike, thank you for coming on, man.
So awesome. Thank you.
You got shit.
Yeah, we'll have you on again.
Yeah, keep please watching. Come back. You got anytime. Shit to plug. You got shit to plug, man. I know you do, you fuck.
If you love podcasts so much, let's see, what's the target demographic for this particular podcast?
Oh, my God.
The
middle-aged Italian men.
Oh, perfect. You guys would love a show that I have called Dynamic Banter that comes out on Spotify and anywhere you get your podcasts every Friday. And doing other things, but that's probably the only thing that you might be interested.
No gabagool-centric podcasts?
No, we just shut down the deli. We had a deli. Yep. We had to shut down during COVID.
Yep. Waiting for that PPP loan. Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, yeah. It's probably coming. Listeners, thank you for listening. As always, you can reach out to us with any comments, concerns, things you like, things you don't like, at osopranospod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at osopranospod. Leave us a 5-star review, as always, even if you fucking hate this podcast. Talk about how you hate when we fucking mention politics. Your sister's crotch, fuck you. Tell us how much you fucking hate us.
Yeah.
When we make fun of, you know, your fucking culture and shit and, like, your stupid comments, you know, feel free to complain about us. But leave us a 5-star review. Thank you again, Mike.
Thank you for having me. This was super fun.
You're very welcome. Oh!
Oh!
you counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving. Oh, Maron, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app. Choose what you want to eat. Gabagool. Some fresh fish. Some nice bacala. And your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off your delivery and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Oh, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Chasing it, baby, chasing it. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.